Major KH lease, reel 4. You were saying what vehicles you had in the transport in 8 Battalion of the Suffolks.
Yes, we had a few lorries, what they used to call PUs. And I suppose the old people said, no, I don't think they had a PU. Was it was a hood over the top and a sort of hood behind, so you would carry luggage. It was known as a PU, a pickup.
What do you have to do in your duty as transport officer?
Well, I wasn't there for very long because my commanding officer, Jackie Lloyd, said, I don't want you as transport officer. You know all about infantry soldiering. You go back to infantry soldiering. And so back I went up, and Jackie Lloyd said, what do I want? I want a garage preparator. The garage preparator took over, as far as I can remember. Mm. I was back on infantry soldiering. Mm.
What were you doing with these infantry and then with the 8 Battalion chaps? What were your...
Well, we looked after aerodromes. I remember looking after an aerodrome right near Suffolk. And we were very well to do because we actually lived with the RAF in their mess. And it was very nice. I can remember we had a very nice room to sleep in. And they even had Lady Batman.
They didn't.
They had Lady Batman's look after. I was very well behaved in those days.
That was something entirely new to you, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Mm. Lady Batman, mm. And so the RAF did themselves very proudly, you see. Mm.
So your soldiers were trained when you got them, were they? They in the 8th Battalion?
Well, no, we had to train them, I suppose. Mm. They were sort of recruits, so they mm. did. They knew how to fire a rifle and things of that nature.
Well, what about other things? I mean, were they competent tactically? Was there?
Well, we didn't do very much tactics. I mean, we were on the coastal defences, and as soon as we dug one lot of trenches and put up some scaffolding, they moved us somewhere else to do the same thing. Mm. I remember Churchill came down to inspect us, and he came down and walked around, and so did several other people, very senior officers.
Did you ever have any scares of paratroopers landing or amphibious attack?
No, we didn't really. It was a whole idea in those days of defence rather than attack. Mm. We moved around the country so much, and up to Biggest Neighbourhood of Minnesota. That was it. I was still see around this part of the country some of the old pillboxes. They had the red line, the yellow line, and goodness knows what lines, which was all idea of defence rather than attack. And then, after that, they decided that the thing was, of course, they should attack the Germans, not defend.
Did you ever think the Germans were about to invade? Did you ever have any alarms?
Not really. We never knew when they were coming at any minute. I mean, there were alarms we knew something about. But we were all standing too and checking vehicles and making certain everybody had the rifle arms taken out of the vehicles and all that. Mm. And of course, when we got home, we did a vast number of exercises.
What sort of exercises?
When I was after the 8th Battalion, I was moved to another battalion, the 30th Battalion. And it had, it was a sort of home defence battalion. It was a really interesting setup. We were down near Bath when they were about to land. And then we did a considerable number of exercises around everywhere. And I was down with as an umpire. And an interesting thing that happened then, that this was one general sort of level lease, and I was a simple lieutenant for captain, and we were doing a big exercise down in the Midlands somewhere, and I came up to him, and he saw me, and he said, come here, captain, come here, and there was this large general sitting up with his medals up, and it was first mustache, and he said, come here, you see there over there, there's a is a battalion of infantry, and they're going to cross the river. Now, if they cross the river, and it will ruin my exercise, and he struck his cane at me, and I luckily didn't say that my name was Least Two. I nearly did. So he said, don't stop them. I hadn't gone down the road very far, and now the battalion got across the river, got swimming, got to his exercise. And dealings I'd had with General Sarge, but it's really odd on his.
Did you see him again?
Yes, afterwards, of course. He didn't know me. His exercise was on the ship, because they'd crossed the river in boats and swam, and goodness knows what. A whole battalion lined up at 800 or 900 men, I'd let us find him.
In your capacity as umpire?
My capacity as umpire.
Well, I mean, did you notice a change in the type of training or the way in which it was conducted when you got back from India?
Yes, the whole training was so vast, you see, it was on a huge scale. Mm. We were always umpiring up, we went up to Scotland to umpire, and I was given a car, I remember. A civilian car to drive up somewhere to Scotland or somewhere in the civilian car. We didn't have enough transport to move me about. Or we went on a motorbike, that was another thing. Mm-hmm. It being very alarmed, having to drive a motorcycle past a column of tanks in the other direction.
What sort of chaps were in your 30th Battalion? Did you?
Home service people, I suppose.
Were they conscripts or reservists?
Well, they were conscripts, yes. Mm. They were the older people.
They were older?
They were older, yes.
What sort of average age would they have, do you think?
30, 35, 40. Mm. I remember my colonel saying that his family was from the British and Edmunds. He was a colonel, and he used to interview his men and say, what disease are you suffering from?
What sort of replies did he get to that sort of question?
Well, you see, sir, I've got really bad eyes. Some good eyes.
Were they all Suffolk men still?
No, they were. Yes, not the Suffolk men. They came from any other place. Mm. Then they moved me to the Monmouth Division.
Yes, how did that compare to the Suffolks? What did you notice in these?
Well, first of all, we weren't orientated towards welcome to starters, and they. I suppose they found out they wanted in the, and at that time, everybody checked on them, seeing the officers had changed. The colonel had been sacked because he was a go-ahead man, and he was sacked, and they had a new colonel came in. And he, this colonel now, in those days, he led them such a dance, swimming rivers and goodness knows what. And but one of the lieutenants, I suppose, got together with somebody else, and they went up to brigade headquarters, and they said, we can't go to war with this colonel, so we can't go to war with him. Because he'd given them such an awful time.
What happened to him?
I think he moved on for another job, and we had another colonel now in the Monmouths.
What were the differences between these Welshmen and your Suffolk men?
Well, they were sort of much more bouncy, I suppose you'd call it. I mean, I used to have to teach them to play weather or something. We did exercises around, and we had what do they used to call it? Working day, night by day. In other words, you set by day and work by night.
What was the idea behind that?
Well, so you could work at night in the case of war. Mm. And so we had a couple of weeks of that.
Had you done much training for night operations before then?
With what?
Had you done much training for night operations before then?
Oh, yes, I suppose we had a little bit of place, yes. Mm. But not as much as we had to then.
Mm. Were the Monmouths at that time a standard foot infantry battalion?
Or yes, it was an infantry battalion, the Monmouths. Mm. And I remember I was almost given command of your company, but I suppose luckily the other man was given command instead, and he went out to France. He got a bomb on top of him. In the meantime, I was a bit fed up for months, just asked to go into the RASC.
Well, why were you fed up with them?
Well, I didn't like months and in, I suppose. And I thought an RASC would be much more interesting because it was constant, you see. And of course it was. It was most interesting.
But was it difficult to get yourself transferred from the Monmouth?
No, one applied and one was sort of said, all right, you can come and join us. And off I went up courses, as far as I can remember.
Where did you do the courses?
We went down to South End, the courses down there. It was a sort of a South End on sea. They gave us a course down there.
What subjects did you study on that conversion course for service corps?
It was a sort of a general course because there were so many things in the RASC. There was infantry training, of course, which I was all right with, transport, boat. So they had a boat company down there. They had ducks and all that sort of thing. And so one did a sort of course in all this.
Were you able to focus on your particular area of interest, which I gather was transport? Was that possible?
Well, it was just simply on everywhere. We had our headquarters at Bullard Barracks, so I think I was there for a while.
What, so how long was this course at Southend, the sort of general introductory?
Because they simply didn't know anything about the army at all in those days. They didn't know whether I'd be at Sandhurst or not. I suppose it was 6 weeks or so. And then I asked to go on a motorcycle course at one period. And we went on a motorcycle course, I think, down there. And we did all kinds of things on motorcycles here, there, and everywhere. And at one period, we were taken, given a map, and we went up in convoy. Up north somewhere, from South End to Colchester or somewhere like that, was handed the map. Now they said, you can go back down to South End on your own, here's a map. And of course, when I'd been cycling on the 102 across where we were, because there weren't any markings on the roads, and one had to go into a cemetery sometimes. We got down there again called South End, and actually fell asleep on the bike, and I almost fell asleep, and I met somebody else there. He was going down about 5 miles an hour, he fell asleep, fell off his bike. In due course, we arrived back in South End.
Well, what was the idea behind the motorcycle course?
They had to instruct people on motorcycles. The order came out in the beginning of the war. All officers would learn to ride a motorcycle. Majors and above could ride a pillion. So everybody was instructed to ride a motorcycle. I think after that I didn't like looking at a motorcycle in the face again. But after that came the Normandy landings.
So what happened to you? You converted to RASC, and by now it's 1944.
And then I found myself as a transport. And
transport, yes. Was this
a skipper company, I think I was.
Yes. Was this a troop-carrying company?
Tippers were for the engineers, where they could load gravel and stuff into it.
Where was that based?
So we were based that moved around a bit, and we didn't have any tippers.
You didn't?
So I had to take them into the training. And eventually we were given some tippers, about 2 days before we went over to Normandy.
What higher formation were you in when you had the tipper company?
Eventually I found myself in 12. I was moved when I got out there. And it was core troops. 12th Corps troops.
And were you attached to an engineer regiment?
No, they just used to, when they were in fire, went across to Corps troops. I suppose we were Corps troops, yes, but they sent instructions where they wanted the tippers.
So you would have come under the senior officer in Corps headquarters, 12th Corps of the RASC.
Yes,
sir. Yes.
In charge of transport.
Yeah. He would he be?
Right, yeah, he'd probably a colonel or something.
Crass, would he be called?
Yes,
Corps, all our Army Service Corps. And when did you actually cross the channel to Normandy?
I crossed the channel on D plus 2.
So that's the 8th of June.
D plus 2. And as we came across, we were shelled as we came across. The shell went very wide and independent warriors. And we found ourselves off the Normandy coast.
Where did you embark for this voyage?
Southampton, I think it was.
So you embarked to Southampton. What sort of vessel were you on with your tippers?
An American boat of some sort. Mm. And the captain was American. I think I had a very nice job. Mm. I was given a job as I walked on as OC troops, which is a sinecure, so I stopped on the top deck.
How long did it take to get across?
Couple of days, I think.
Do you remember where you landed? On the other side?
I went backwards and I looked at the beaches where we landed.
So you went on went over a beach rather than to a harbour?
No, we went on. Well, there was no harbours there on D plus 2.
Mm.
We were on the ships and they put the ships. First of all, nobody knew very much about it. I think from the information we received on the radio, all these vehicles had to be waterproofed.
Mm.
And there was a vast amount of pests in it, and everything conceivable was stopped up. And the exhaust came out of the exhaust and they were sealed up and they came right up out of the water.
Mm.
So it was we were put onto landing craft and taken ashore. Then from there we had to go in the water, onto the land. And every now and again there was a boat would go into a shell hole that we'd asked to solve the vehicle. And we got out mostly pretty safe, of course.
How many tippers did you have in the company?
Mm. A platoon of 30 task vehicles, I think it was.
So you had about 90?
So it was about 90 tippers.
And what capacity do they have? What sort of tonnage of?
Oh, they're very light tippers.
They were?
Yes. Mm. And when there was a platoon commander, and a platoon commander had his own vehicle.
Mm. Were these a civilian type of vehicle, or were they specifically military design?
They were military, I suppose they'd been built especially for that sort of thing. They were light vehicles, so many tons, so what you call an extremely light vehicle.
Mm.
But they couldn't have heavy ones because they had to move around the countryside.
Mm.
Shell holes were going to say, well.
What happened when you got the vehicles ashore? What was next?
We went into a sort of lager, and from there we received orders sending vehicles all over the place.
Mm.
Then I was moved to another bigger transport center.
Mm. Do you have any idea where the lager was? What place it was at?
No, I'd have to look at the map where it was. It was just on the coast there.
Mm.
After that, I was then transferred in the 12th Corps troops to a place thing called an FMA.
What's an FMA?
A forward maintenance area.
Right.
With myself, a major, myself a captain, and a few troops, well, half a dozen troops, and we had to go forward, making reconnaissance and setting up a forward maintenance area. Having selected everything for was maintenance area, everything used to come up, supplies, ammunition, and everything else you could think of used to come up.
So
where they used to be dumped.
Yes.
And from there, the forward troops used to come back and collect supplies and supply the fighting troops. It was known as an FMA.
So how far back behind the...
Well, sometimes the FMA was almost in front of the leading troops against where the Germans were.
So you would be filling up the sort of...
We set up the most important thing of the office, the maintenance area. The main for engines and out, the signs we put up, military police.
So, that, I mean, this would be where the B echelon would come back to fill up, to go forward to the fighting. And where did you get your supplies from? Was there a rear maintenance area further back?
They would come up, well, petrol, for example, they had to come up there, and they had to come up in jelly cans from the base, you see. Supplies would come up from the big main depots.
How far back was the base?
Well, that was down on the coast. They had all these high-polluting areas, and then they started their... down in the harbour, they built a harbour so they could land alongside. This is on the coast, Normandy coast.
Did you actually send vehicles back to collect stores from the base?
No, they just set up with another lot of transport.
So you had no transport for collecting or delivering, you were simply...
We were the organisers.
You were administering the...
Yes. I can remember... When we got into Germany, it's interesting there, we were at a railway station called Wolterdingen. And we saw there some trucks standing on the side of the road, standing on the railway line, which we didn't take much notice of. And apparently what had happened, from the big prison camp up there, they were going up there, and there were a lot of people in the prison camp, in the vans, and these Germans had taken them outside and shot them all, and they were buried in a pit. And this we found out, so they saw this was looking around, and they dug into the ground, and they saw hands together. And we informed the military government had taken over, and the burgomaster arrived, and we said, the military government officer said, "We will dig up all these corpses and put them into a coffin and bury them properly." So the next day, the whole village was turned out. Women, children, well, children were turned out, and they started digging. And they dug up all the bodies. And I got away from them, and I said, "We sent up a couple of soldiers just to keep an eye on how the digging was there." And then there were awful screams all of a sudden. I went rushing up there to see what it was all about. He saw some soldier go mad and dug somebody. But the whole trouble was, there was a girl fell into the ditch with the bodies. That was it. And they took them out and buried them all in coffins. There must have been about 30 bodies there.
But when you were back in Normandy in the forward maintenance area, what sort of... demand were you having to face? Were you dealing with a brigade or a division or...
we were four troops, so we were dealing with the... everything forward from corps, you see, to come and collect. And I suppose then the FMA, then the brigade would have their own little maintenance area.
Yes.
But
it sounds, because if you're forward from corps, then presumably you're supplying divisions, and divisions would be then supplying...
That's how it sort of worked.
How many men were there in the forward maintenance area on your staff?
Major, captain, and about 10 or 15 others. One policeman. Policeman there, military police, and he used to come up with goose and tails and said, when I was down in Paris, I had to get around. I went and witnessed a whole lot of executions there. There's great details out, it's all done.
What were the characteristics of a good forward maintenance area? I mean, you said you had to go and reconnoitre suitable areas. Yeah. What did you look for when you were choosing a forward maintenance area?
Any place which was... roots in the roots back, and you found a factory, so much the better. You could occupy the factory put everything on it. It was petrol. It came up in cans, and then was put in a depot. You see, they could issue the petrol. It was all in jerry cans. They used to have pioneers, hefty pioneers. They used to send this petrol about in great cans. You get loads of cans.
So they were doing, what was all the loading and unloading done by hand?
They were all done by hand, yes.
Were your, was your forward maintenance area ever attacked in any way, by air attack or by any artillery?
No, we weren't attacked because we thought we were going to be at one time when the Germans started to break through up in the north. We were a bit uptight then, but nothing happened.
How was the administration done? Did you receive indents or demands in advance of the arrival of transport?
No, we actually didn't do that. They would send demands to the depots concerned. They wanted so much ammunition, or they wanted so much supplies, their rations, so many rations for theirs.
And how did you get yours? Did you send back a requirement to base then when your stocks were running down? Was that the way in which you...
Well, yes, we wouldn't actually send it. It would be the depots themselves would send down to base ordnance and things like that. Because ordnance was part of the FMA, transport.
What about medical supplies? We were involved
medical
in
supplies,
the
yes.
Have you any idea of what sort of, business you were doing, how many items you'd be issuing on in a day normally?
Well, it's quite impossible to tell, just supplying a whole vast amount of supplies.
Did you have to keep detailed records of goods in and goods out?
No, that had been done by the depots themselves. And they would indent how much ammunition they bought. Or the number of days supply they bought. As you know, in those days, everything was done on a ration.
Ration strength.
So they'd ask for so many days' ration.
Did you ever run short of anything?
No, we never ran short. And we, in due course we arrived up near Benson, and it was horrible up there, the whole atmosphere was. I went into the camp once, and I didn't want to go near it again. I kept well away from it.
Did you have a sort of routine working day when you were running the FMA?
We did to go day or night whenever we were called upon.
How long would it, if you had to start moving, as an organisation?
As an FMA?
Yes. How long would it take you to get packed up and ready to move?
I suppose we had a jeep and a couple of lorries, and we just packed up with the soldiers inside and off we'd go.
So how long would that take, do you think, a rough estimate?
Less than an hour, so a couple of hours.
Did you ever have to move at short notice?
No, we never knew. We didn't really. Well, we were told, actually. What notice we had. Then, of course, people used to go home on leave.
How did you get on with the French in Normandy? Do you have anything...
Yes, I speak French a bit, and so that was very useful because I can speak German. I had learned it at school, and I recall that my company commander said, one of my men here had his son killed. They would take him out, they gave us the area where it was, and I went out to explore with him, and what had happened was, some yards back there was a wood with the German soldiers being on, and the company commander of that particular company had come up over the hill. As he came up over the hill, he was shot and killed, and this man's son was also killed. And there they'd been buried down at the side of the road, already in the farm. And we went up over the hill where the Germans had gone. It was a nice experience.
Were the local French friendly to you?
Oh, very friendly, yes. They were very friendly. Of course, when we went to Brussels, we had a whale of a time.